This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a Houston jury decides the fate of Enron's chiefs, and Rumsfeld speaks out. All that and a prestigious honor for 50 Cent. Joining us today to discuss these topics at our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson. He's an editor at the Washington Post. Laura Washington joins us. She's a Chicago Sun-Times columnist. She is in the Windy City. And from member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University. All right, folks, welcome. We want to get right into what I think is not a surprise to most of America, but certainly Mr. Lay and Mr. Skilling, as they spoke yesterday after the announcement, they said they were clearly surprised, and that is guilty and guilty. We should note that Enron was, at the time, before its collapse, the nation's seventh largest company. 6 days of deliberation, Joe Davidson, it took this jury to turn around and suggest these men knew of the issues and problems.
Well, I think that according to the reports, one of the things that hurt them the most was their own insistence on defending themselves. In other words, testifying at their trial. Interviews with jurors after the trial indicated that the way they presented themselves as being a very hands-on group of managers led the jurors to question, well, if you're such tight managers, how is it you didn't know about all of this fraud that was going on? And I think they came across as a bit arrogant, according to the words of the jurors. And I think this ultimately hurt them. So they probably would have been better had they kept their mouths shut.
Laura, I was interested mm-hmm. in listening to some of the news accounts that talked to the former employees of Enron, who clearly suggested that while they felt justice had been served, a couple of them said they wished that there was a way, an ability to literally bankrupt these men, to take all of their earnings away and let them live the lives that these employees have lived out over the course of the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, I don't think that they have to fret about that at all. They are going to be bankrupt by the time this process is done. First of all, they are going to obviously appeal these cases, these verdicts, and that's, they have some very expensive lawyers on hand. So that is going to, you know, take even more millions out of their pockets. There's going to be a barrage of civil suits that are going to be filed on behalf of the stockholders and the folks who lost their pensions. So they're going to be bankrupt even before they go to jail. Don't worry about that at all. I wanted to agree with Joe on this whole issue of, you know, taking responsibility. They sat on that stand and they talked about how they were the great minds of the company, how they were in control. And yet, in the end, what they tried to get away with was what they call the ostrich defense. You know, I didn't know this was going on. You know, the folks underneath me were robbing us blind. I had no idea what was going on. They failed to take personal responsibility. And I think that the jurors were reacting to that. One of the jurors, I think, was a elementary school principal, made the point, you know, I run an elementary school. If one of my teachers screws up, I have to take the responsibility. And I think that issue really resonated with jurors.
You know, and I think the other thing, Laura, is that, I remember, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we've just started having these major CEOs being charged with major malfeasance. You know, you remember Bernie Ebbers from WorldCom, the gentleman from Adelphia, and a few others. I made the comment, in fact, I bet a few of my colleagues that there would be, quote, few white boys who would actually go to jail. I could not have been more wrong. And I think what's happened is this, that not only are these white guys going to jail, you know, Martha Stewart is going to jail. And it reflects, and I think the jurors captured this, that there's a time, and this is where the time is, when you do something as egregious as what happened with Enron, where millions of people, where millions, billions of dollars of pension have been lost. You remember Arthur Anderson is out of business. Thousands of people have lost jobs. And when you do something so that it begins to impact so many, many people for their livelihoods for the very long term, it reminds me of what happened with Trent Lott when he had to face the issue with his mother and the prescription bill. He couldn't go home and tell her why he would not support a prescription bill for his mother. And so I think what happens with the jurors now is, and with the public is, listen, guys, I know people who've been hurt by this, and there's no way you guys are going to get away with it.
And on that point, Nat, it might be worth pointing out that these guys were not just big wigs in the corporate sector, but Ken Lay was a was a big donor to President Bush. He donated some $300,000 to his two gubernatorial campaigns, to the to the then governor's gubernatorial campaigns, and $100,000 to his 2000 presidential race. He's somebody that Bush once called Kenny Boy.
Not only are they politically active in town, in particular Lay, but they're also very active in civic affairs. Lay gave millions of dollars to many civic causes, and a la Richard Scrooge in HealthSouth, I think he thought that that was going to save the day. I'm this big guy in town. I've helped you in the community, but the community turned on him.
And it's good
to
know.
Well, we should note that to save any delays, September will be the reckoning day as relates to sentencing, but that may in fact be pushed back. All right, Donald Rumsfeld took to the airwaves last night on Larry King as he did an extensive interview with Larry King. He talked about that a timetable to exit Iraq would not do any good. He also talked about the strength of the U.S. military, but that he was, in fact, surprised at the strength of the insurgents in Iraq and that there were no weapons of mass destruction, blaming that on imperfect intelligence. This juxtaposed to a report released by the Congressional and Defense Department officials that suggest an official military investigation into allegations that American Marines killed innocent Iraqis last November has uncovered evidence that a number of dead civilians is much higher than the 15 originally reported. Larry King also talked about Guantanamo, where Donald Rumsfeld suggested that everything was fine and dandy there. There are going to be those, Laura Washington, who suggest that this interview is part and parcel of the problem. It's the emperor has no clothes once again.
Well, it's no accident that this interview was done with Larry King. With all due respect, he's not the most insightful interviewer in the world, and he tends to treat all of his guests like celebrities. And of course, Rumsfeld got the celebrity treatment, and it allowed him to give us still another snow job. It's clear that this is a tactical strategy on their part. I don't think it's working. It's what I call what they've created around the White House is a culture of implausible deniability. I mean, they want to deny, they want to say, you know, that everything is okay, but they just are not believable. It's completely implausible to say that whether the intelligence was perfect or not, that you didn't have, you should have been in possession of enough information to make some intelligent decisions. That he was surprised by the insurgency. There were plenty of folks predicting this even before we went into Iraq. So he definitely has no clothes. And then when you look at some of the things that are happening on an ongoing basis right now, some of these investigations you mentioned, and the fact that they aren't even addressing these issues, again, it's completely erodes their credibility.
Hey Joe, don't want to give short shrift to the investigation in the sense of the name William Calley comes to mind, and we know what that became. When you talk about killing women and children included within this alleged massacre, it can become very problematic to the military.
Well, there's absolutely no question about that, and I think, if I recall correctly from one report, I heard that one child was 3 years old. If this becomes the Bush administration's My Lai, you mentioned Lieutenant Calley, and of course that's what he's associated with in the Vietnam War, which was a critical turning point, I think, for many Americans in their view of that war. If this becomes that, well, then the perception of the war can only fall further. And it's already, we're already talking about a Bush administration that has ratings in the 30% range in terms of approval ratings. And I think the strategy to try to generate support for the war is at an interesting crossroads for the Bush administration. Last night, in his televised press conference with Prime Minister Blair, it was interesting the way they acknowledged some missteps, some mistakes, if you will, after having this kind of bravado front for so long, and it was clearly a different approach. I'm not sure at all that it's going to help win back support for the war that has dropped drastically over the past couple of years.
Well, you know, Joe, I agree with you. I watched that press conference last night, and I thought, as we do as Americans everywhere, begin to reflect on this Memorial Weekend, that America itself and its view of this war has already reached a turning point. And I think that the recent revelations about the number of Iraqis killed in this possibly by the Marines, that this is, as President Bush acknowledged, he said that one of his three or four mistakes that he was ready to acknowledge, he said so far what happened in the Abu Ghraib prison was one that he thought that we were paying a terrible price for. And I think should it turn out that, in fact, these Marines have killed innocent troops, innocent civilians, Iraqi civilians, it will also be something that will stain our presence in Iraq. And I think that as we, you know, we're not even talking about the fact that we're spending $9 billion, a month any longer. That's not the problem. The fact that we may be approaching something like 3,000 dead Americans is not the problem. But I think it's more of the fact that we have now, the future of our involvement in Iraq is left to the prime minister, the newly elected prime minister of Iraq. How did we get ourselves in this position?
Laura, Rumsfeld suggests that a timetable won't do any good, but there's a looming date that may make all of this moot in the sense of pressure put on the White House, and that, of course, is the 06 midterm election.
Absolutely, November. And I think it's going to be one of two ways. Either the administration is going to get with it and decide that they've got to send a clear message, timetable, something that has an end date or has some hope for us getting out in the near future. They have to make that announcement before November, or it's going to get made for them in terms of the, I think, given what we were just talking about their low ratings in the polls, a lot of folks are going to go down in Congress, Republicans, because of this, and then it'll get made by whoever's left standing.
Joe, what happens in a situation like that in Washington if, in fact, you see some of the House and Senate being blown away by the peripheral issues here on the war, and they are going to look to the White House for blame? What happens in a situation like that?
Well, I think what you see happening already is you see Republican candidates in some cases not wanting the president to campaign for them openly. They might allow him to come in and raise money in a closed-door session, but they start putting distance between themselves, their candidacies, and the Bush administration.
So it becomes Bush's albatross.
Exactly. And I think that's what it has become. And you find many Republicans who are critical of the president, not always from the same perspective as Democrats, but they do have a lot of criticism for this president, and not only for the war, but for spending measures. A lot of Republicans think, for example, they're curious as to why he has not vetoed any spending measure as of yet. And so you find a lot of Republicans looking at his poll ratings, as I said earlier, in the 30s, and they're realizing that this might not be the guy I want standing next to me at my next rally.
We should note, Nat, that Congressman Murtha, who made a name for himself a few months back in talking about the problems and how problematic this war has become, suggested after hearing all of what the White House has said over the course of the last 48 hours that we simply cannot sustain this operation.
Yeah, and I think that Murtha is the one voice in for both Republicans and Democrats. I think Murtha has become the voice of midstream, middle America, just everyday common Americans. When he says, look, folks, we went in there with good intentions. We had bad information. We're there. We had good intentions. But now we're part of the problem. And I think one of the ways that we may get a troop reduction out of this is that the new prime minister will privately advocate for a reduction of troops, and that he will take the lead in this and suggest that that the Iraqis are asking the Americans to withdraw, and that will may be the face-saving measure that the president needs. After all, this has moved away almost in some respects, as Joe pointed out, from being America's war to being Blair and Bush's war.
Yeah.
That
all right.
They
Let
were
me,
the two
get
guys
this
who
in.
Did this.
Let me get this in very quickly before we run out of time. Taylor, load this up for me. Here's a song made popular by the very popular rapper 50 Cent.
Don't trip, yo, in the car, mine's in this. I ain't tryna beef, I'm tryna get my drink on. Now my diamonds, my fitted and my mink on. I'ma kick it at the bar till it's time to go. Then I'ma get shorty here and I'ma let her know. All I think I really need is a little bit.
All right, that's just a little bit. 50 Cent, got to get his drink on. We should note that 50 was honored with the very prestigious Songwriter of the Year Award from the... authors and publishers of the Pop Music Award and ASCAP BMI. Here's what's interesting. Those of us who, and I should note that I'm not a big hip-hop fan, though I do own some 50 Cent, but it's hard for a guy who grew up on Smokey Robinson and Bill Withers and Marvin Gaye to listen to some of the lyrical content in a 50 Cent song and wonder why you're winning Songwriter of the Year, because he also won it for Candy Shop and a number of other songs. And if you knew what Candy Shop, and here's the interesting point, if parents knew what Candy Shop was really talking about, many of them wouldn't walk around singing it, Laura Washington.
Well, parents should know, and if they don't, that, you know, shame on them. I think, you know, I agree with you. 50 Cent is not on the top of my list of performers, but, you know, creativity and quality is in the eye and ear of the beholder. And folks, the young folks today, this is what they want to hear. This is what is making money for the record producers and for people like 50 Cent. And I think it really comes down to that. It's not about creativity when you, in terms of these awards. It's who has
the marketing
influence.
Though we should note, Joe, that this was voted on by 700 songwriters. So this is an industry award.
Yeah, that's true. And I agree with you, Ed. I mean, we're both from Detroit. And, you know, like you said, Smokey Robinson, Marvin Gaye. I mean, compare What's Going On to Candy Shop. I mean, you know, to me, I don't understand it. But I will say, though, that in preparation for this, I went out and I read the lyrics of some of his songs. And while some of them rub me the wrong way, there's also a certain poignancy in some of these lyrics that speaks to kind of really the devastating situation of young black men. And so I got to give him his props for that, even if overall I don't think I would have voted for him. I know I would not have.
Nat, real quick for me.
I was with Laura. I looked up the lyrics for Candy Shop, and I just couldn't believe it. I mean, to imagine that adults are walking around singing that, it's just beyond comprehension.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let me say this.
Speechless.
Let me say this. I didn't have to look up the lyric because I knew it, so maybe that speaks to me. All right, folks, thanks very much. Greatly appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back in just a second. Happy birthday to the man known as the Picasso of jazz, Miles Davis, and Kind of Blue. And what happens when a star loses his 15 minutes of fame? We'll tell you what happened with one star when the spotlight dimmed.
Go ahead, man. Have a dollar. In fact, no, brother man, here, have two. $2 means a snack for me, but it means a big deal to you.